Helloa, Maria Zylstra here with Lingua Franca, introducing today, on the phone from Los Angeles, Julia Cho, this year's winner of the Susan Smith Blackburn Prize, awarded for the best English language play by a woman for The Language Archive, which is currently being performed by the Roundabout Theatre Company in New York City, and the central character of which is a linguist called George, whose life's work is to preserve as many dying languages as possible, cast against the strained communication within his failed marriage. And there's something of a personal aspect in this play, in how the playwright herself yearns for the language of her own heritage, which was lost in the migration of her family from Korea to the USA. You'd go along with that, wouldn't you, Julia?
Oh, I would absolutely say that the play is a meditation on yearning to speak languages you cannot speak. So yes, you know, I do wish I spoke Korean, which is the language that my parents speak. The fact that I don't speak it is something that has always kind of made me a little sad. So I suppose that that can be seen as kind of a loss or a lack. But then I also saw that the gift of it was that I could have only written a play like this because I yearned to speak a language I didn't speak. So much of the play kind of grew out of my own sympathy for that kind of project. You know, the idea of languages dying out, as it sort of makes George sad, it makes me sad as well. But I think what drew me most to the idea of it was just there's such a kind of a beautiful... It seems like such a beautiful endeavor to me, you know, to try to save languages, even though they can't be saved. So then the best you can do is just record a little bit of it. And that just really spoke to me.
Well, just a little bit more about George first, before we delve into what it was that spoke to you, because the thing about him is that despite his interest in languages and the appeal of his project, he's actually not all that likable or endearing. He's an obsessive collector more, but he's sort of incapable of making use of the stuff that he collects, in particular with his wife. But also, he's not very good with anyone else either, his researchers and even his subjects. And in fact, he sort of uses language and the language archive almost as a wall to block people out.
Well, I actually have a lot of sympathy for George. I certainly didn't mean to create him to be unlikable. I actually like him quite a bit. I mean, I think George has actually a huge heart, and he cares immensely about the things that he cares about, but that he just doesn't have the right tools. So I think of George as very well intentioned, but just lacking a certain ability to communicate or even read people. And my hope would be that there's certain aspects of his struggle that we can all kind of identify with. But it's true, there's certainly a great deal of irony alive in the fact that here he is, someone who can speak so many languages, and yet he just cannot communicate with his wife. But to me, that's also something that they both are part of. They really are built differently, and that Mary, in her own way, is unable to communicate with George.
Actually, that's sort of, I did come around to that, I think, after my initial great annoyance with George. but in particular, with his wife, she speaks to him, and then he doesn't even acknowledge that she's spoken, or he certainly doesn't respond to her directly. And he almost blames the languages for his own lack of expressivity. I'm not quite sure what the right word is. And there's a scene early in the play in which George makes a speech. He's describing what he does, and he concludes with a sentence: "It makes me sadder than I could ever possibly express that even with all my languages, there still aren't the right words."
Uh-huh.
It's almost like it's the fault of the languages that he doesn't speak, doesn't communicate, doesn't put himself on the line, doesn't, you know, give out.
Well, I think though that my own opinion is that I don't think there are things that any language can express completely. So for me in that moment, George is trying to express in his own way that there are certain things that for him are ineffable. And even if he knew every language, he doesn't know if he would be able to express that emotion of sadness or loss. So I don't think he's blaming the languages.
Mm. There's also the link actually located in George's own background, because you tell in the whole of this fascinating parallel story, and we'll get onto the parallel in a minute, about communication and communication breakdown and language loss. And what has happened in George's background goes some way to explain why George is as he is. In fact, he says it's a central reason. It's to do with his relationship with his grandmother. And so the older generations of the family into which he was born, he tells how she spoke a language that he never learned, one that he says is as familiar as his own face, as well as absolutely incomprehensible, one that made her strange to him, and that he says he separated himself from and from her the very first chance he could. So there's this kind of immense gulf in his own life, like a huge rupture.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely that arc to him, but I don't necessarily feel that George is damaged so much as that he is realizing this might be sort of why the way I am. For me, it's a moment of self-knowledge for George, and then I actually do believe he loves languages, and they give him a joy and a purpose and a meaning. So for me, there's actually a lot of richness to George's life, and a lot of richness to his relationship with Emma and with the people who kind of come in and out of his lab.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those people who come in and out of his lab. That's another couple. Emma meets them too. Emma's his assistant.
Yeah.
And George and Emma are about to record their language. They're elderly, husband and wife. Their language is called Elaway. Only they're feuding, so they're only communicating in English, which they say is perfect for saying mean, hateful and ugly things. And so here you're depicting a different kind of couple from George and his wife Mary, a couple who know what language is for and have choices and make choices about it and its proper usage, or the usage that they want to put it to in their relationship. They're fantastically contrasting.
Yes, I mean, the older couple, I mean, here are two people who are cut from the same cloth. I mean, they have no problems communicating in whichever mode they choose to. So yes, I do think they are there as a bit of a foil to George and Mary's relationship.
And their language, Elaway, is one that you've made up, right?
Yes. Somehow it just suited the play better if the language was a kind of unpinnable language. And just to, you know, clarify, they choose to argue in English because as part of the made-up history of Elaway, this, you know, non-existent land, I think part of the idea is also that they're from a place that has been colonized by English speakers. And English was the language that they were forced to speak in school. And their own language was the language their parents spoke of, you know, affection and trust. So for them, what language you speak has completely different connotations.
Yeah. And can you describe it then, its sound and maybe something about its structure?
Well, I think there is a passage in the play where they talk about Eloa having the sound of rushing water. So if there is any parameter on it, it would be nice if Eloa had a soft kind of rushing sound to it, because part of, again, the made-up mythology of the language is that the people who spoke it lived by the river, and that the language was informed by the way the water sounded.
Right. Well, you did make up some words for it because the characters do use some words with each other, but also some that get recorded and some that are played back at another time. And in Elloway, the words for "I love you" are not to do with the emotions that someone may experience, but they mean, in literal translation, "don't leave me," or, as the wife of that couple, Alta, she puts it in these words, "I never want to be left by you. I never want you not with me." And she says that there's absolutely no equivalence between Elloway and English. And she says it's not just individual words, but the whole thing.
Yes. To me, that is something, I think that is something, I believe, that an entire language can just have such a different worldview than another language, that there aren't any, direct equivalences. I mean, I suppose you could say that, okay, well, there's still, words for chair or bed or, things like that. But I think that when Alta says that, it's more just that the entire paradigm of the language is so different. And I do believe that there are languages that exist in such different paradigms from other languages that there just aren't any easy translations. That the whole place where the language is coming from is so different that just saying something as simple as "I am asleep" is completely different in this other language. And so I think language has its limitations, that it's not transparent for meaning and that one language can't be interchangeable with another.
Well, it kind of makes a mockery, though, doesn't it, of George's endeavour, the language archive, because even if you then do record words or languages, parts of languages, if it has a whole different meaning and no one speaks it anymore, then, the power to understand that worldview is kind of missing.
Well, I think that, to me, there's something beautiful in the futility of his task. I think what touches me about his endeavor is that he is trying to save something that can't be saved and trying to record things that can't be recorded. But for me, instead of saying, well, then that's a useless task, I almost feel like, well, art is useless in its own way. You can't eat it. You can't survive on it. And so to me, there's something very artistic about what George is doing. It's a completely beautiful task that actually is not changing things. It's not saving that which can't be saved. And yet he finds this purpose and meaning to it. So for me, that's part of what makes me like him even more, the sort of the futility of it and yet his persistence in the face of that futility.
Ah, right. So, Julia, thanks awfully for coming here on Lingua Franca. I'm aware, made your play sound terribly serious, but it actually is very funny. And when I was reading it, I laughed many, many times. It's very playful.
Oh, good. Yes, it's true. We've had a very serious conversation about what is actually not a very serious play. It's serious in a very unspoken way. But yes, I'm glad that you pointed that out.
Julia Cho on the phone from Los Angeles, talking about her award-winning play, The Language Archive, showing in New York City till December 19. Check the Lingua Franca website for its production details, abc.net.au/rn/Lingua Franca. For ABC Radio National, I'm Maria Zylstra. Doo!
It's 20 years now since the death of the great storyteller and children's writer Roald Dahl. New generations of readers are discovering his work, but what's been his influence on other writers? Dahl's new biographer, Donald Sturrock, and his daughter Ophelia talk about Dahl's evolution and influences, and children's author Andy Griffiths describes his experience of reading Dahl. That's on The Book Show. Download or stream the program from the Radio National website.